Arquistas Ring. Challenge yourself to 125 stages of mystery. And welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
And I'm Joe.
You still get to do the end I'm Joe, even though Sean's not here, so that's good.
Yeah. Back when Sam used to be here, that was always tough, because I think it, for the longest time, secretly was end I'm Sam. And then I took the title when he stopped coming on so much.
Yeah, and you mentioning Sam probably makes people worried that Sean's not coming back either now, but he's just, for the first time ever...
I've only got one more to go, and then it'll just be my podcast.
Exactly. Yeah, you're moving your way up the line, certainly.
Yeah.
So
I just got to take you out, and then it'll just be me.
Yeah, and some people think we sound alike, so it's practically already two of us or two of you or two of me, depending on which way you look at it. But Sean's coming back, everybody, just so that that's the thing. And, he isn't feeling well, so we're going to record without him, but he will return. And now we have to do a whole episode where, I don't know, Joe, I guess you have to fill in more voids than you usually do.
Yeah, I guess I gotta play Sean.
Yeah, so Arquistas Ring is throwing out 125 stages, and you know that's an impressive claim back in the day. But what does 125 stages sound like now? Does it sound impressive? Like no video game nowadays is made with 125 chapters or or does it just sound monotonous?
I mean, it depends on what you mean by a stage. And I think once you start playing Arquistas Ring, you realize very quickly that it's not exactly that one stage is like one screen on The Legend of Zelda, but it's pretty close to that. Like, the stages, they're not what we're used to with stages. It's not like a Castlevania stage and there's hundreds, 125?
Yes.
Yeah, like, they're short stages. And, like, yes, there's some game design, but not, I'm sure we'll get into it, but not as much as it would need to be like, oh my god, 125 full stages? Like, some of them are very straightforward, very simple.
That's a very important distinction that you made there, that this is stages in the sense of, Bomberman levels, and not Castlevania Ninja Gaiden-style stages, where there's, you know, an objective and a longer mission. This is really just defeat all the enemies on the screen to get the key to open the door to go to the very next stage. Very little exploration happens outside of that. So yes, I think even the 125 stages claim, though, in the game is a little bit of blasphemy, not just because the stages don't feel long enough to warrant being bragged about, but because they also repeat fairly early, so it's not even 125 unique stages necessarily. The challenge gets upped, but not necessarily the design or the not. There's no puzzle in this game to begin with, so nothing else really increases other than the difficulty of I think it takes like 25 stages maybe or 30 stages before it loops.
Yeah, I think it's 30. I think when that first castle comes crashing down, that's the first time it loops, right? I think that was 32.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense, because you have to do it four times. We'll get into it. Why don't we actually talk about what the game is, so we can paint a clearer picture for everybody. The Elven Ring of Arquista has been stolen by the villainous Shogun, okay? And I thought it was like, oh, Shogun who? But like, no, it's just Shogun. And I'm not sure, is Shogun a character name, or is that like a type of
like
thing?
Shogun. So I didn't read the manual. It's going to
show
right now.
Shogun.
Like, isn't that like adjacent to like a samurai?
That's what I'm saying. It's like a class, right? It's not necessarily like the name of the evil person.
Yeah. Maybe we don't know. Maybe we just know that the evil person is a Shogun.
Okay. And that evil Shogun has cast the entire Elven Kingdom into darkness. But you wouldn't know it from the game, because it's very bright. The only hope for the elves is that their strongest warrior, Christine, equipped with only her trusty bow and arrows, can travel throughout the kingdom and retrieve Arquista's ring.
I wonder what Christine's name was in Japan, or like Christine just does not feel like a like an like a fantasy elven name. It's so contemporary.
Yes, yeah, and just to add on to that too, I think that for reading that, it kind of felt like a reveal. I was expecting Arkista to be the main character, but of course that doesn't really make any sense because you're going to get their ring. But how do you go about getting their ring and defeating these stages and everything? This is a Zelda clone if it was just the dungeon parts of Zelda and it was just the room of a dungeon at a time. People have referred to this as a Zelda clone. When I think of Zelda clone, I think of something more literal, something that actually takes all of the elements from the inventory system to the map to the hidden secrets and the puzzles. This is really just that action adventure part of the game where you're in the dungeons. This has individual rooms that you explore. You find enemies. They are not hidden or anything like that. You deal with them most likely one at a time. And when you finally clear all the enemies off the stage, then the key reveals itself for you to collect the key, go through the door, and move on to the following stage. This is all done in a top-down fashion, just like Zelda. But unlike Link, you know, Christine doesn't have a sword. Christine only uses her bow and arrow, and Link had a bow and arrow and a sword, so already kind of playing with a disadvantage.
Yeah, well, you know what, though? I'll just say one thing. That's probably, like, the one thing that I prefer is Christine's bow and arrow to Link's sword and bow and arrow, because you need to be full health to, like, to just be able to consistently use your projectile, you know, because you need arrows, right, in Legend of Zelda?
Oh, you're talking, yes, yeah, you need arrows to shoot. In Christine, you have unlimited, yeah.
Yeah, I always love when I'm full health when you have unlimited, like, sword throws or whatever it is. But in this, it's just like, I'm not good enough at this kind of top-down NES game to stab with my one pixel sword or whatever it is. So I did appreciate the full projectile available for Christine.
Like you were mentioning, the combat change here with the bow and arrow, there's a different thing, and I think this is my biggest gripe about the game. It's one thing to have the projectile be the main attack, and, you know, this way you can deal with things at a distance, and obviously they have projectiles too, but there's this, you can't face a new direction without taking a step. And so in other top-down games, if you just want to, like, shoot to the left, you just hit left on the D-pad, and your character doesn't move, they just face the left now, and then they can shoot at anything to the left of them. In Arkista's Ring, Christine requires to take that step in order to face that direction, and I don't know why, but this tripped me up a number of times when I was, like, first starting the game, where I was just taking unnecessary damage, because you almost have to, like, think about where the enemy's placement is. You're taking a step to, you know, land in their direction, and then you can fire. So a lot of times you just happen to, like, walk into an enemy. Did that happen to you at all, Joe?
All the time, especially on boss battles, but also, like, you know, a lot of, I'd say most of these levels are very, like, traditional maze-like, you know, and not in the sense that, like, the mazes are difficult or, like, it's hard to find your way through, but it's like you have narrow Christine-sized hallways to walk through. And there are a lot of times where it's like, yeah, you're coming up on an enemy that's around a corner from you, and all you need to do is walk to that corner, turn, and shoot. But walking to that corner and turning automatically makes you walk over the enemy instead of just turning. Sounds like a minor thing, but that did happen to me a lot. Like, you'd have to, like, walk and, like, turn away from the enemy, walk away from the enemy, then turn around and walk back a step, and then shoot, which honestly just gives the enemy a lot of time to hit you. That seems unnecessary.
And since it's a top-down game where you can only move in four directions, there's really only two choices for the developer to make in terms of map layout. And that's either incredibly spacious, where everybody just kind of runs around the screen, you and the enemies, or incredibly claustrophobic, where you're just kind of following down a path and there's an enemy in your way and you kind of, you know, pop out, shoot them, go back into the other hole, pop out, shoot them, and deal with them that way. I wasn't able to think of a solution for this because, again, you can only move in those four directions. But certainly, they could have played with the idea of open and narrow a little more than just, in this stage, it's, you know, it's sprawled out. In this stage, it's very narrow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of the few things, to go back to what you said earlier about people saying this is a Zelda clone, one of the few things that makes this stick out as very different from The Legend of Zelda, where, like, I don't know, every dungeon in The Legend of Zelda, even though, like, yeah, they're very, like, simple rooms, they all feel very intentional. Whereas these, they do feel like there's a level of intention. It's not just random, but I feel like maybe you could have done half the amount of dungeons and spent twice the amount of time on each room in like designing interest. Because there are, like, for every one that is interesting, there's one that's like, okay, this is just, you know, four blocks and five enemies, you know, here. And granted, I only got to like level 40, which sounds like a lot, but it's really not in this game because they're so fast. But it's like, maybe they get like way more complicated. I have heard that this game gets like really, really crushingly hard later. So like, maybe, I don't know, the jury's out on like the end game of Arkista's Ring. But that, coupled with the fact that there's actually no exploration in this game. Not you know, not that they're trying to have exploration, it's fine, but like, that means to me immediately, this is not, I would not consider this a Zelda clone. I did initially when I first turned it on, I was like, well, this looks like Zelda, but it does not give me the elements of gameplay that I think Zelda, that to me is like the major parts of Legend of Zelda, is like exploration and freedom.
Right, and you think it would be easy given there's like a whole implied elven kingdom and an evil villain and like the cast into darkness, like what does that look like as you're going through it? But instead, that part's just like implied on you, whereas in Zelda, you saw it. And just to further, you know, you were talking about that in Zelda, the dungeon rooms feel purposefully designed. And that's as simple as just, well, because you're moving from room to room trying to find the boss in that dungeon. Whereas in this game, there's only ever one stairs to take, and that stairs will take you to the next screen. You don't, you know, you don't get to decide like, oh, you know, they're giving me the choice of north and west. I think I'll go north this time, right? Like in Zelda, you're given that option. But also the rooms feel purposeful in Zelda because there's puzzles and secrets, and if there's neither of that, usually it's like an extraordinarily tough enemy. In this game, there's no puzzles whatsoever, and so I think that's actually what stops it from being the Zelda clone more than even just the open world exploration part. I just think, like, where's the anything other than just shooting enemies off the screen? Like, it feels like at this point the bow and arrow could be anything. Make it a gun, make it whatever. It's like, it just doesn't feel like a real world in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would say that there are no puzzles whatsoever. I think a lot of these rooms can be categorized as very easy puzzles. You know, like there are things where it's like, oh, there are hidden doors that like look a little, some of these trees look a little different than others, and if you hit the one that looks wrong, it'll open up like a secret door. Like, it's sort of like a puzzle. It's not like, you know, it's not a crazy brain teaser. You're not going to be, you know, you shouldn't go like apply for Jeopardy because you got, you know, through one of these puzzles. Like, they're very simple, but like, they're puzzly. They just don't ever feel like they're designed in a way to be like really challenging in the puzzle element.
Would you recommend people play the Jeopardy NES game before they apply for Jeopardy?
Yeah, if you can beat the Jeopardy NES game, then you're Ken Jennings.
There's also, you said you got to level 40. There is no save feature in this game, and that sounds not like a big deal in the stages, but keep in mind, 125 stages, and only, what is it, five hearts throughout? So, yes, they give you continues, but even those are limited. So it does feel like, you know, even if the game itself isn't crushing, the length kind of eventually will get you.
But so those passwords, though, they... So are there passwords in this? No passwords.
I don't think there's passwords in this
game.
You know,
I'm thinking of, because I also played next week's game, and I'm thinking of next
week's game. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I can understand that you could get Bad News Bad News Baseball confused with Arquista's Ring, just like I got Bad News Baseball confused with Bad News Bears.
Well, Bad News Bears, though, that makes sense to confuse with Bad News Baseball. Just because.
So, going back to the question then, now that you've been proven wrong, was it the length that got you to level 40, or did you just say, I'm done playing this game? What caused you to turn off around there?
I was not sick of the game. That's just how far I got, you know, as I was playing. Like, I'm not opposed to playing more of this game. I feel like we're being kind of negative about it. But, like, the game is, at least so far, is kind of cozy. I don't know if that makes any sense, where it's like, yeah, it's not, it's kind of like a turn your brain off and, like, play, but it's, like, still decently fun. Like, I enjoy getting into a room and being like, oh, what are these enemies? How do I take them out? Like, it's just never, like, it's not something I'm going to be like, oh, like, you got to, like, we got to sit down and play this game. I never feel like, oh, I'm craving to play more of this game. But if it's like, oh, I'm just bored right now, like, man, I'm really getting to my essential vote right now. That's not what I'm meaning to do. But, like, I guess I'm trying to say, like, I didn't get sick of this game. I feel... It's like comfort food game almost. Like, I feel like if I had this when I was a kid, I would have played it all the time and probably never raved about it, but like it's just fun.
It's easy enough and there's few obstacles in your way other than the enemies who aren't exactly I don't know, they're not really thinking. They're not really alive, right? They're just moving in any given direction. They're not even coming towards you necessarily.
Yeah, but there are like, again, you know, only getting to level 40, I don't know if maybe I capped out and it doesn't get any better, but I did find that there was like a gradual progression of enemy types. Like, I was just starting to get, well, I think I was like a few levels past like the introduction of like the ninja characters, and then who like jump over walls and they can basically just move around the level freely, and they're very fast, and they feel ninja like in the way they attack you, and like You have to think of them totally different than any other enemies you'd been facing before that. And then there was also around the same time these giant green like troll looking enemies. They're really slow, but if you've got your basic arrow, take like 1,000 hits to get rid of, and you got to kind of sort of do like this set up this chase and attack, you know, thing where like as they chase you, you get far enough away from them, shoot until they get too close, and then run away. Like I felt like enemy variety was nice.
Yeah, and actually, you know, you're reminding me of the green ninjas. You know, like, yeah, they are unique in the way they behave in the game, and probably just in these kinds of games. Like, we haven't really seen an enemy do something like that. However, I guess what I meant is just that, I don't know, they don't feel like they're homing on you or anything. They feel like they're just kind of on the screen, and it's up to you with the bow and arrow to run into them, if that makes sense. Like, did you feel like the enemies were thinking?
I mean, I felt like some enemies were exactly like you described. There are the skeleton guys that just kind of walk back and forth, but they have a different gimmick where like they're basically the dry bones from Mario. Like you defeat them, they fall into a pile of bones. So it's like, that's why I was okay with them not like being smarter. But the ninja things particularly, I felt that as soon as one, basically I considered it seeing me, like as soon as one was on screen, they honed in for me. And same thing with, there are these other, like, it's almost like a palette swap of the ninjas, but they're like gray or white. And there's one level, like, around, like, 30, where there's six of them, and they are all honing in on you. And you have to really think about how you're going to, like, avoid them, because they're probably exactly as fast as you. But I guess, my long story short, I found that certain enemy types definitely honed in right towards me. Those giant green trolls I just talked about too, but only because they were so slow, it didn't really bother me as much. But
and all that to say that, just, you know, I guess it doesn't really matter to me either, because they still pose a threat given that you only have 5 hearts. But it might be attributing to the cozy feel of the game that, for the most part, you're just kind of going through these dungeons with nothing else than cleaning up the enemies, and so it becomes this. I mean, I believe she's just, you know, she could be the cleaning lady of the dungeons, and she's just coming out and taking care of these people, and it's just satisfying to remove these characters off screen rather than do anything else, right? Like, you don't have to think about what you're doing in this game. It's almost arcade-like after a while, especially given the short nature of the stages. that it's just, okay, and I cleared out that wave, and they shouldn't even be calling them stages. It should just be wave one, wave two, wave three. But of course, they're calling them stages because graphically and the layouts are different too. But it really does feel like it's just, okay, bring on the next wave of enemies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And, but there is, you know, there's like, it's weird because I never consider the like quote unquote puzzle elements bad, but they are just never memorable or good, like at least so far. Where like there is the element of like you go into the next stage, it's like you're in this dungeon with 30 doors and you got to figure out which one is the right door. And they do that a lot. That's kind of almost like they're, it feels like it's like the like cheap way to make a puzzle is like by making a bunch of doors and not letting you know which one it is. You know, it's like, oh, it's a puzzle because you got to figure it out. So there's things like that where it's like, it didn't bother me. It was like still felt like a decent part of the gameplay to try and solve this, but I never had to turn my brain on, you know, to figure that out. But it was like, that was the other element in each thing, was like, how am I going to get out of this dungeon? Because sometimes it's not even a door. Sometimes it's a tree or something that looks different than the others that like leads to the next stage.
Joe, did you ever pause the game?
I'm pause sound Joe. Of course I paused the game.
So did you notice the weird thing about pausing this game?
All I noticed that there is no pause sound and the music just keeps going. But was there something else?
There was something else, but, you know, I did not play this on official hardware, so I'm hoping you might remember to recall this. There's no sound. It's that when you pause, you press the start button, but you don't unpause with the start button.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You unpause with B, and I don't recall a game that's ever done that, where button is different than the pause button.
But also, B is the pause button, too.
Yes, but it's the pause button in that sense because it lets you access your inventory.
Yeah, but which functionally does the exact same thing, because the start button also lets you access your inventory. So it's like the start button is pause only, and then the B button is pause and unpause for some reason.
Yes, yes, and the B button works for me as a pause because it's technically like an actionable button that you're entering some menus for, whereas like the start button, at least obviously, you know, in modern video games, it's more useful, but the start button in NES games for me is associated with pausing. So it's like, all right, cool. This time they get a pass for including it in the inventory thing. I just thought it was really weird that start wouldn't also just unpause the game.
Yeah.
Like how did they program this did they notice? Like obviously they noticed, but like they wouldn't bother to fix it. They'd be like, no, we don't want people to unpause with the same button they paused.
Yeah, yeah. I don't understand. It seems almost like a mistake.
And so using the B button version to accept your items in your inventory to use them, putting it another way, that's important to note that there are other items you can find both that are weapons and true items, things you can wear and such. Did you think that this was enough for the game to switch up from the bow and arrow mechanic? You know, there's the fire wand that lets you shoot fireballs instead. There's the holy stick, which just destroys most foes on the screen. You know, I think that without like introducing another type of weapon, like a sword or something, this was probably the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I thought that this the amount of inventory options was perfect in my opinion for the first 30 levels. I think honestly, again, having only gotten to level 40, I didn't really realize until watching some footage that like I had pretty much seen the whole game, it seems like, because of the way it loops. And that like I am starting to think that like if I were to play 125 levels of this, I would probably need something else to change up, you know, the levels, the enemies, or give me new power ups, give me something new in later levels. But to speak about the power ups, I did think that in the time that I played, I thought it was very, you know, fun and well balanced. Granted, there is one power up that I don't fully understand what it does. There's that one wand that does destroy a bunch of enemies on the screen, but there's like another like wand, like winged wand looking thing.
Yep.
That I would always use it and it would just flash and nothing would happen.
Yes. I think it depends on which type of enemies are on the screen. And I don't know which kind it destroys, but it's not a glitch. It just, I think it takes down like undead foes
Yeah, that, okay. I thought it was that something like that. I probably should have looked at the manual, but yeah, the other things, I mean, I love the, I mean, my favorite obviously is the like scepter that shoots fireballs or whatever, like Dale. But then there's also the music box that puts, I think, just ninjas to sleep.
Yes, very is that what it is? It's a music box?
I think that looks like it's like a music note. I might be thinking it's a music box specifically because in Super Mario Brothers 3, the music box puts the Hammer Bros to sleep. But it looks like a little music note with a crank or something.
Sure. No, I mean, it's gotta be something, right? It's not a taser.
Yeah.
Because it's called in the manual the Ninja Stunner, but I don't think they have tasers in the Elven Kingdom.
Yeah.
You were talking about maybe that they needed a little more variety, and I kind of feel like that's implied too on that character screen that you see where it's like it's got her portrait, it's like name, Christine, type, elf, sex, female, from Arkista, and it's like, okay, not expecting some role-playing game stuff where I'm going to be able to like change my type or where I'm from, blah, blah, blah. Like, I get it. It's a set game. But then there's this whole, like, what kind of bow you have, your armor set, like, what's in your bag. And, yeah, what's in your bag changes based on what you pick up, but it's not like there's shops in the game. And your armor doesn't change. Just your bow and arrow changes. But, like, to always be wearing the leather armor, it's either, why bother showing me this on this screen? Or it should have been upgraded.
Which screen are you talking? What you're talking about, just the bottom heads-up display?
No, there's like I don't even know what triggers it, but there's like a character screen with like a portrait of Christine and everything.
I don't think I ever saw that. But it was it a button that you hit, or was it like between levels?
It's like between levels, I think. It's like after you, I'm pretty sure it's after you defeat the boss. Yeah, like after you defeat a boss, you see that. It exists. It's not. I'm not making it up. I promise.
Yeah, that's crazy. Maybe I'm just misremembering it, but yeah, I mean, even the bottom heads up display has all these bits of armor and like your helmet and your cape and your gauntlet and your shield and your armor. And to what I can tell, those are just kind of more hearts. And like, am I wrong about that?
Yep.
Like they just function as more health,
but not even that much more health. It's not like it's not like you're getting so much stronger by the end of the game.
No, I was thinking that like, all right, when I'd have the five hearts and then I'd have the armor, the shield, the gauntlet, the helmet, and the cape, it felt like basically I had 10 hearts. Like I thought that those, like it was weird to me for them to show it down there as if they're like, oh, this is your defenses, when really they literally act exactly as just more hit points. It's like I'd like to describe it. It's like if you have all your health and all that armor, then you get hit once, like the first piece of armor on your heads-up display will blink out like it's a heart, and it's gone. And then your helmet blinks out, and then your gauntlet blinks out, and then eventually it gets to your hearts. And to as far as I can tell, they do not behave any differently than just an extra heart container in Zelda, which is fine. I mean, like I guess if it's like, oh, you had 10 hearts and you decided to turn 5 of them into armor before you release the game, just for some flavor. That's cool, I guess, but like when I see it there, I'm disappointed when I realize that it like doesn't do anything that's functionally different than health.
Joe, I was able to solve the character screen.
Oh, good.
What's funny is neither one of us is wrong. Okay, yeah, it happens after you finish a stage, but it also requires, as you implied, a button input in between stages. So when it shows you, you know, like stage 22, if you press the select button only while that is up, that's how you get the character screen. And that's why I must have just done it as an accident, or I must have read the manual or something, because it just happened to me, and I made note of it. But again, it's not anything useful. It's more like a cool flavor text thing.
Yeah, I mean, so like what it just gives you basically the information that's on screen at all times, just in like a nicer format. Is that?
Yeah, like with text descriptions of them and stuff, and text descriptions about Christine. But again, these are, you know, that's me being kind to the game. It's being very very minimal in what information it gives you. And so I do kind of wish that, like, hey, if you're gonna build this kind of feature into the game, like, make it do something more.
Yeah, Yeah, because so while I was playing this, a lot of the time I was thinking, like, I don't know anything about what's going on plot-wise here, and I, in the end, didn't feel like I needed to know the plot of this game, but I do kind of regret not reading the manual, and I'm curious, like, flavor text, without any flavor text here, like, having read the manual, is there, like, a plot going on? Is there anything that you should know that, like, that gives you any... that elevates this experience more from, like, a story standpoint?
The manual, which usually I get from thegameisafootarcade.com, which I'm not sure what that means. The Game is Afoot Arcade.
Game is Afoot is, I believe, a old Sherlock Holmes quote.
Okay, there we go.
The game is afoot, like the game is on. Someone's playing this game with us.
That also helps solve that.
Also featured on a season of Survivor.
Huh, I would have thought a season of Doctor Who.
Probably that, too.
The manual is scanned so poorly that some of the text is too JPEG'd to, like, fully read. But I can tell you that it has a nice map of the Elven Kingdom, something that would have been nice to see in the game. It has the Legend of Arkista, which is probably the closest it gets to the Legend of Zelda. I don't even know, like... that they should have just named their game that then, right? If they're going to be that brazen about it. But it tells you about how she, like, became notified that this was going on. And her name is Christine in the manual, so it's not a mistake or anything that her name is Christine. And, yeah, it says, suddenly the doors of the town hall swung open. So these elves, like, have a whole society, you know? You wouldn't know it from when you're exploring in this game through 125 stages, but there's a whole society and government and all of that going on in this world.
Yeah, it's just over there. It's over where you don't see. It's all right off screen.
You know, but it just makes you think, right? Like, how many other video games did we play where there were just, like, functioning societies and governments going on? Like, did you ever think about that in I'm trying to think of, like, a really old game that we would have played, but yeah, like in Clu-Clu-Land, right? It's like, for all we know, that's their job. And then they go home and they're like, you know, how was work, honey? You know, and it was like, oh, I got
swinging around pegs.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I got really sick at work today. I swung too much.
I wonder if, maybe the manual, or maybe there's some deep lore for, was her name Clu-Clu?
I don't know. The Clu-Clu characters' names, but that's a good trivia thing. We should find that out.
Yeah.
I was also thinking of, for some reason, maybe it was like the lack of puzzles in this one. I've had Solomon's Key on my mind for most of this episode.
Oh, and yeah.
There's got to be a functioning society in there, right?
Oh, absolutely. Solomon's Key and also the Adventures of Lolo.
Yeah, Adventures of Lolo. Obviously, like, yeah. If there's a castle.
Yeah, there's a society. Yeah, right. Exactly. And yeah, Solomon's Key. I mean, even if there's a key, then there's locked doors. Somebody made these locked doors, you know?
So that's another question that falls into this game, but also ties back into the whole Zelda clone argument. Who's locking the doors and leaving the keys? Is that the mystical, magical part of things? Or is that implied that, like, Ganondorf, or in the original Legend of Zelda, Ganon, and then here, Shogun, are, like, saying, like, yeah, I'll let you catch me if you can.
Well, is it like, is it that the, you know, because of course, if you're going to lock yourself somewhere, it needs to be possible to get there and to get out of there. So, like, you need a key out there, likely. And is it possible that it's, at least in this game, that the enemies you're fighting are like Shogun's lieutenants? And if you fight enough of them, you know, one of them will drop the key. Even though it's obviously the key doesn't drop out of the enemy, but it's like, oh, you've beaten enough of them that you've been able to get the key from them to move on. Like, they're protecting, they're guarding the way forward.
Hmm. Okay. And I've never thought of it like that. I always thought, like, you know, the real devious thing to do would just be, like, leave just enough keys that it seems like they can complete the dungeon, but just take, like, yeah, one or two.
Right. Yeah, you actually just start in one door right behind the starting screen that doesn't have a key. Just stay locked in there and make them go on this long 125 screen journey.
That sounds like a great indie game move, you know, like just like the realization that you have to go all the way back to the beginning, yeah, now to fight the boss, yeah, who was always behind you.
Yeah, like if you had just gone backwards that first screen, you would have beaten the game already. It's like in, is it Far Cry? Where,
oh yeah, you could just shoot them right at the beginning of the game.
I think there was that, but there was also something where it was like, someone says at the very beginning of the game, someone says like, "Wait here, I'll be back in an hour." But then like, you know, you wait on the couch, you get up and you walk around, and then like some crazy shit happens and you get kidnapped or whatever it is that happens. I've never played a Far Cry game.
Oh yeah, I think that was Far Cry 4.
Yeah, if you do just wait on the couch for an hour and don't touch the controller. Apparently the guy comes back and is like, "All right, thanks, let's go," and like the credits roll.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's great. That's a nice touch. By the way, most important piece of information we're going to give people today, that fish, believe it or not, that fish from Clue Clue Land
that we've all been talking about.
Yeah. That balloon fish, apparently. Did you know that the character in Clue Clue Land is a balloon fish?
I didn't know. We must have talked about that on the episode. When we were in our prime.
And then if you had to guess the sex of the titular character.
I know it's a female.
It's a female balloon fish named Bubbles.
I was going to say Bubbles too. I feel like that stuck in my head a little bit, but it's easy for me to say that now after you have revealed that it is Bubbles.
Of course. Yeah. No, you were always going to say balloon fish.
If you can
too.
Edit this into earlier right here, I'll go. Was it Bubbles?
There you go.
Edit that in earlier and then edit out this part.
It's just that simple, folks. The magic of podcasting.
I do want to point out, though, in Arkista's Ring, early on in the loop, there is a level that has houses. It's like a little village. You can't go in any of the houses. There's no people or anything. But like, it wants you to feel like, oh, this is like an open world RPG. There's little. They look like little RPG houses.
But what would be the harm in just being able to go into one of those houses and having the character be like, you know, little text dialogue, "Help us," right? Like, not even that much text, right? Like, it just adds some kind of flavor.
Even just being at the very, very beginning of the game, even if you just want to put that one house there, these two houses, and it's someone saying like, yeah, just say, "Shogun has, you know, cast the world in the darkness. We need your help." Like, give me that. That's all the story I need for this game. But it would have been a nice touch since you put the houses there anyways.
Yes, yeah.
Like the houses that are just blocks. They're just blocks that are colored in like houses.
Man, this game is such a tease.
I
houses, character screens.
Yeah, right? I mean, I did think when I first turned it on too, like, oh, this is going to be, this is, I don't know why I just got like an accent there, but this is going to be my type of game. Not that it wasn't, but it's not. It tricked me into thinking it was going to be something it's not.
But you had never heard of Arkista's Ring before we played it this week, right?
I feel like I've probably heard of it only in like looking ahead at the podcast, and it's an enticing sounding name. So I've probably like clicked on the Wikipedia article before.
Interesting, because see, I do think that the name is a little intriguing, and that's part of the curiosity of why I never see it mentioned either. Like, you think it would just be a name that people would remember or whatever. I never heard about this game. I'd never seen anybody mention this game, and in researching this episode for the show, I saw very little about this game. Like I said, the manual was barely scanned in on Moby Games, the like, you know, the video game database of the internet. There was not even a shot of the box. Like, I couldn't get the box art on there. They just uploaded the cartridge. It's like, where's all the information on this game? Did it actually get released?
I actually meant to bring up earlier, and now it's been so long, probably neither of us can remember, but did you read the back of the box at the beginning of this episode?
I did. It was "Challenge yourself to 125 stages of mystery."
Okay. I blacked out for that. I was, you know, still, I was thinking about Sean.
And do you know how I found that back of the box?
You had to mail in a request to Nintendo.
It would have been faster to just buy a copy on eBay, sure, no doubt. But instead, I found someone had uploaded both the front and back of the box as the, like, still image on the YouTube video for the official soundtrack of Arkista's Ring. And so I had to, like, zoom in, you know, Command+, like, get zoom in just to see, like, wait, what does it say in the back of the box? And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to the front of the box. And the front of the box says, "Challenge yourself to 125 stages of mystery."
Well, it's funny that you went through all that work and all it was probably what you would have come up with if you had made it up.
Right, right. Yeah. Do they even call it stage 125? No, right? Like after stage 30 or whatever, it just loops back to stage one, right?
No, it does. It does say like I'm like watching a video right now. It says like stage 58, and it's
okay.
It's also what was stage 27. So it's like that math's wrong. But
we've been talking about the game for so long that I forgot what it is.
Yeah. I'm forgetting
features.
It's Legend of Zelda, I think.
Yeah, right. Well, those bats do look very close to the bats in Legend of Zelda, so I can understand a lot of confusion.
I mean, I don't want to assume this because, there's only so many styles you can do on the NES, but it does feel like they wanted people to associate this with Legend of Zelda based on the art style.
Absolutely. No doubt in my mind, and there's one thing we always try to do in these episodes is associate the actual show with the most important part of the show, the Essential Games List. Arkista's Ring is a really, really early Binding of Isaac, and as such, it's missing almost all of the features that make Binding of Isaac so great. Not even the roguelike features, I'm just talking about the variety and the anything can happen possibilities. Like, this is, you're just going from stage to stage and everything, and you're just focusing on the action portion of what makes Zelda games great. But is that really what makes Zelda games so great? Because if so, I also feel like Arkista's Ring, while missing what makes future games like Binding of Isaac so good, it also misses a lot of what made The Legend of Zelda 1 so great. So this game just kind of falls as like a into the category of mini game in this day and age. It must have felt surely like a full game back in the day, but now it really just feels like something that is, a one-off play, and anybody can experience it, sure, but what do you really walk away with? And so, for that reason, it is not on my essential games list. Joe?
I'm surprised to hear you say that you could find so little about this game online, because I think this game has all the makings of what back in 1990 would have been a B+. I think that it was, I can't get away from this phrase, comfort food. Like, it feels like it's just a fun game to turn your brain off, play. It's not going to get too, apparently it does get really challenging later, but it's like not too challenging in the puzzle element. And it's, you're just doing this simple task over and over again. You do one stage at a time, you sit down for a couple stages, and like, that's it. It's just, you take a break. If you played it now, you'd play it on the subway. But I think that this, even today, is fun, and I would probably rate it play it. But like, yeah, there's just not much. There's not much to it that's like making me want to rave about it or like that it's going to stand out. But like, if I were a kid in the 90s and I had only a limited number of games, this would probably be one I would go back to a lot when I just wanted to like hang out and chill. Yeah. So overall, I mean, I think that this is a play it. But one thing that I'm forgetting to mention is that I think it's just actually just not acceptable to to make a game and then copy and paste it 5 times and then call it a longer game. So that is another major point against it. So definitely not essential, but, a relaxing, fun game.
Joe, you bring up a great point about just like childhood games and what you can do when you have unlimited time to play video games. Like, yeah, this suddenly does become more acceptable and more like, well, I know I'm good at this, so I should keep playing it,
Right.
Whereas I'm not sure, like, Ghosts and Goblins is on the spectrum of like, yeah, with unlimited time, like kids would enjoy that game too, but for like a totally different reason of just like, let me see how much further I can get this time.
Right.
Whereas this game is more like, yeah, I mean, it feels good to clear stages, so let me just keep doing more of that. Whereas like nowadays, when you're working for most of your life and then you have very little free time on the weekends and PS5 games exist, it's hard to justify going back to Arkista's Ring.
Right. And not to just make the same point I just made again, but like the other thing that hurts that is that like the point in for this of like progressing would be to see what's next. Like that's what's fun. And if like it's just gonna be the same stuff you already saw, the game ends at level 30.
Joe, I have some bad news about next week.
Oh no.
We're gonna be playing Bad News Baseball.
I knew it.
And for some people, that might be good news. And for us, it kind of is, because that means another episode of the show. Is that good news? Do we want to keep doing the show? Sean's out now. Should we continue?
I'll keep doing it. I'll try and convince Sean to come back. I'll see. Probably will take me a week, so don't expect next week, but I bet the week after I'll get him back.
All right, and who knows? It might be good news that we play bad news baseball.